I'll represent you.
They can afford it now. They made a killing on this.
Yes, seriously, they definitely can afford it. So this is going to be our last week of the year where we're going to do a new parak of Shmuel, because I think that next week we're going to take a look back, review some of the major themes and ideas we saw over the course of the year. And then parak Chaf Hei, for where we're going to be up to, is really going to be a great way to start off for next year, because we'll see the story of David and Naval and Abigail is going to lay a lot of the groundwork for some of the major themes of Shmuel Beis, which is what we'll spend most of our time on next year. So this one, now one last week, Parak Chaf Dalid, another week featuring David on the run and Shaul running after him. Last week, we saw the main takeaway we got from last week was the Navi gave us the most profound, not even like an x-ray, like MRI level insight into Shaul's psyche, where he keeps on telling himself that he is doing what Hashem wants. Hashem wants him to chase after David. Hashem wants him to capture David. He's giving brachos to the people. Hashem will bless you because you've handed over David's location to me. And at the same time, he's wrong at every turn. At every turn in last parak, the hashkacha was clearly on David's side, time after time, getting David out of trouble. We'll see in this week's parak is the Navi is going to really shift his attention and give us a real insight into David's perspective during this whole time. Something we've seen the last few prakim is that the Navi really is very reticent to give us, to pay much attention to David, which is very surprising because David HaMelech is the star of Sefer Shmuel. But for the most part, in order to get like a real read into what David is thinking, we've had to turn to Sefer Tehillim, because David is shockingly silent for much of what we've been doing the last few prakim while David has been on the run. So Parak Chaf Dalid, David is going to end his silence, and he's going to end his silence dramatically. This is going to be the parak, the famous parak, where David cuts off a corner of Shaul's garment, and we're going to see what David is going to say there. So load up the screen share, one second, and let's get started. Okay, so where the Navi ended the last parak was after being pretty critical of Shaul, as we often are, the Navi ended off with a point to Shaul's immense credit, right? And this is one of the most fascinating things about Shaul, is that he's so complex. The Chazal, many, many positive midrash about Shaul, because there's a recognition that deep down, for all his flaws, he's fundamentally positive. And he had the moment of truth where he has David surrounded. He's on one side of the mountain. David's on the other side of the mountain. He's sending his army in a pincer movement. He's going to get him surrounded. David's got nowhere to go, nowhere to turn. And then suddenly, remember, the Malach showed up, whether it was a human messenger or a literal angel. Either way, it was clearly said by the Ribbono Shel Olam to tell Shaul he has to leave the desert immediately because the Plishtim have invaded. And to Shaul's immense credit, even though he has David in the bag, he recognizes his duty and he turns around and he goes back to fight the Plishtim. So Parak Chaf Dalid now starts off by telling us that Shaul's, you know, paying attention to his day job, right? He's a king. He's supposed to be fighting the Plishtim and defending Am Yisrael. It doesn't last very long. Sounds like as soon as Shaul returns from fighting the Plishtim, David is in Ein Gedi, right near the Dead Sea, as we all know, an ideal place to hide out because you have water available, you have resources available, you're also in the wilderness, and there are mountains, and there are caves, it's a remote location. It's part of Eretz Yehuda, so it's friendly territory for David. It's an ideal location for him to be. So the minute that the Shaul finds out about this, it sounds like, he jumps back into action. He did his duty fighting the Plishtim, but it's clear that his passion is still trying to track down David. Pasuk Beis, v'yikach Shaul shloshas alafim ish bachur mikol Yisrael. He takes 3,000 men, and it sounds like these are the special forces. Bachur mikol Yisrael, the chosen ones from all of Israel. Vayelech levakish es David v'anashav al pnei tzurei hayelim. He goes to look for David and his men on the rocks of the the rocks of the Ya'elim. So here I see they translate Ya'el as the wild goat. But more precise, Ya'el is an ibex, right? Which I spent way too much time last night looking for a good picture to put on the source sheet. But just to get a sense of, here's the ibex. My Rabbi Ma'asacha to take 3 minutes to go online and watch some of the videos they have of the ibexes, how these goats can literally walk on sheer cliffs. But this is the land that David is hiding out in. It's rough territory. This is not soft living for anybody, right? And you see the intensity, the dedication that Shaul has. He's willing to take his men to the most hostile, remote location possible in order to track down David. Now, you also might notice that Shaul only takes 3,000 men. Now, on the one hand, there's a good reason for that. Why doesn't he take his whole army? It sounded like last week's parak, it sounded like Shaul was taking more. It was like his whole army was there with him. And then he had to take his army around because his army was needed to fight the Plishtim. Remember, the beginning of the parak began where the Plishtim were attacking a border city, Ki'ilah, and David went to fight off the Plishtim. And then Shaul was MIA to fight the Plishtim, but he heard that David was in the city, brought his whole army down. This time he only brings 3,000 men for a very simple reason, which is when you're going, trying to track someone down in the desert wilderness, you can't bring 100,000 soldiers into a place that looks like this. It's just not going to work. The logistics are totally impossible. So what he does instead is he takes the smallest possible group of his best troops. So he's getting the best bang for his buck. So he'll still be able to crush David's men, even though he can't bring as many soldiers as he ideally would like to. I think that Mikra also points out, interestingly, we saw last week some things come full circle, because remember, David had about, he had about 600 men, which was Shaul's original force fighting the Plishtim back in Parak Yud Gimel in the good old days. So they point out, Shaul also comes full circle, because Shaul fought that battle with 600 men, but he actually began that battle with 3,000 men. He sent a bunch of people home, and he took that core force, his original special forces army was 3,000 men. So now it's back. But instead of using those 3,000 men to fight the Plishtim, like he did back in Parak Yud Gimel, before Amalek, before the fall of Shaul, before he lost the kingship, now he's using these 3,000 men to fight David. So now they come to the Gidros Tzon. They come to where people, right, where the remote shepherds would pasture their flocks. Visham Me'ara, and there's a cave right there, many, many caves around in Gedi. Vayavo Shaul Haseich Hesraglav, and Shaul goes to use the bathroom. I was a madrich on the NC, so I summer kolol for 3 summers. And one of the major trips we take the boys on every summer is to one of the major cave mountains over here in Midbar Yehuda. Either once or twice, if you remember, inevitably, you have 170-200 boys on a hike. So one of them is going to hold up the hike because he decides he needs to use the bathroom in the middle. So the caves that are right there are an ideal place to do that. And it's true in the 21st century. It was also true 3,000 years ago. So Shaul goes into the cave. Chazal point out that this is a classic instance of Shaul's modesty. Right? Shaul was the king. He could just have his men put up a tent or put up some partition for him to use the bathroom. But instead, Shaul insists on going where no one can see him. The modesty of the king is a good thing. So he goes inside the cave, and as we know, it happens to be that the one cave that Shaul chooses to go to the bathroom is the cave where David and all of his men are hiding. There are many, many, many caves around En Gedi. It happens to be the one that Shaul takes, happens to be the one where David's whole army is hiding. So if we just stop and think for a second, I'm turning on the screen, sir. I just want to reflect on this. Let's think about David and his men. Because like we know what the story is going to be. We know the story is going to be that his men are going to say, oh, you have Shaul, and David's going to say no, and he's going to cut the corner of the garment, and then they're going to have the confrontation afterwards. But we need to stop and appreciate David's leadership in this moment. Because let's think back to last week's parashah, where David was the head of this ragtag force of 600 men from the bottom of society. Right, we were kind of joking, but not joking, that David was violating the Mishnah in Berkei Avos of Altihi Rosh Lashualim, because David is the head of a fox, but he turns the fox into a lion because he actually elevates the people who he leads. And the men last week were alarmed and horrified and distressed and depressed for a very good reason, because they're facing insurmountable odds. They cannot muster the bitachon needed to sense that they'll be able to survive this. There are 600 men in the desert being chased by a strong, energetic, powerful, dedicated king who has, with his force of will, managed to unite all the Shvatim under one monarch. And now he's taking that single-minded dedication, which he's used his entire career to chase off the enemies of Klal Yisrael. Now he's using it with an obsessive focus on David. And they don't see how they can survive. And David keeps on telling, right? Remember, we're going to ask the Urim and Thummim. And then David asks the Urim and Thummim again. And he's trying to get his people to believe that Hashem has their back and their soul. Because the military strategists among them are telling him there's no chance. The only chance they have is if they can muster the bitachon that's necessary. And David is trying, pushing and pushing and pushing. Let's ask three and four times. Let's ask the Amitumim, ask the Amitumim, ask Hashem what we should do, ask what we should do. Hashem has our back. We're going to figure it out. Now, finally, unbelievable vindication for David. Right? After so much pushing and what his men had to go through, you know, living in deserts like this, on the run. The Navi had said when they ran from that city of Keilah, they just went by Salachu Asher Salachu. They went wherever they could go. Here, there, one place, another place. They're fugitives in the middle of the desert. Now, amazingly, right? David had been telling them that Hashem has our back. And sure enough, Hashem has their back because he has miraculously given them Shaul. This is it's not even an Ace Nistar. It's an Ace Niglab practically. Happens to be that somehow Shaul is by himself in the cave with no bodyguard, no security, no one knows anything. He's right there. Hashem has given him to our hands. What David has been telling us for months has come true. And you can imagine not just the relief they have that they're going to live because we're going to kill Shaul and we're going to survive, but the religious amazement that they have. They see Hashem's actions before their very eyes. And so they come to David and they tell him, what you had said to us is true. What Hashem had told you, here we see it. We mamash see it happening. Hashem is giving you the enemy into your hand. We couldn't, it was impossible to imagine this could happen. Now it's here. You can do with him what's good in your eyes. Got to love the euphemism right there. Like imagine the test that David has for himself. Will he do this? It's amazing for self-preservation. And religiously, right? It is very, very easy to interpret this as his men are interpreting this. And they're gonna sing hallel forever. This is Hashem gave us Shaul to kill him. And David somehow is able to muster the strength not to do it. Even though it's clear that Hashem is giving him Shaul, David manages to muster the strength not to do it. Last week, Shaul was convincing himself that Hashem wanted to give him David on a silver platter. This week, it's clear that Hashem gives Shaul to David on a silver platter, and yet somehow he withholds. Now, the psukim about it are kind of funny, and the mefarshim go in a couple of different directions to understand exactly what happens. Because first, the Navi says, "Vayakam David, vayichros es kenaf hama'il asher l'Shaul balat." So he cuts off the piece of David's me'il of his robe secretly. Then, vayach harechein afterwards, vayach lev David. Literally, his heart. You can hear his heart like was hitting him. So he regrets having cut off a piece of the garment. And then there's no way, God forbid, that I should do something to him. Because, and he says twice in one pasuk, this is Hashem's anointed. maybe Hashem has given him into my hand, but I'm not going to kill him because you do not assassinate someone who has been anointed by the Ribono Shel Olam. David may not have so much respect for David, for Shaul the man, but he has immense respect for Shaul the physician. He knows what it means to be anointed by Hashem. And even though Hashem has given Shaul to him, he is not going to kill him. Vayshasa David es anashav bidvarim. And David, it sounds like, Mepharshim, trying to figure out what exactly this means. It sounds like almost like he split them away from Shaul. This is, you can imagine what the people are saying. They cannot believe that David is not going to kill Shaul. They couldn't believe that Hashem gave them Shaul. And now David manages to muster the leadership, not only to control himself against killing Shaul, but he manages to control his men, who, remember, are all there in that cave. And any one of them could run forward and kill Shaul and thereby save all of their lives. But David manages to control himself, and then he manages to control his men. And Shaul goes on his way. Now, there are three basic ways that the Mepharshim, there are kind of three extremes to understand what exactly is happening here with these psukim, where first they tell David, go kill him, and then David cuts off the robe, and then David has regrets, and then David talks to his men. So the Ralbag has like a pretty astonishing line. It's very difficult, but it's so interesting. You can't help but share it. The Ralbag suggests, says, Yitachin lefi apshat, shekvar haya ratzon David lahargo, that actually David wanted to kill Shaul. So that's why they tell him to go kill him, and David runs ahead with his knife. But somehow, v'lo hisig mimenu, somehow he missed him, ki maknaf, somehow he misses Shaul, he just gets a piece of the garment, right? He tries, it's pitch black, he's trying to figure out where Shaul is in the dark, and so he takes a secret stab, but it's not Shaul he just hits a piece of Shaul's robe. And then after David makes contact with the rope, he regrets having tried to kill Shaul. And then he goes back to his men. So that's how the Ralbag explains the psukim. David's men tell him, kill Shaul. David tries to kill Shaul. He fails to kill Shaul. And then after one try and a failure, he has a regret. He turns around and he tells his men, I'm not going to do this. According to this read of the psukim, this is another example of David's unbelievable ability to do tshuva. Because he does slip. He does slip in the moment, the passion, the excitement. The Esav part of David's personality, the Admoni, the red-headed, energetic, red-blooded part of David's personality, does jump forward. He surges into action to strike Shaul, understandably so. And then, after he has one miss, he manages to master his senses, and he goes back to his men, and he says, I'm not going to do it. The Rabbag has another interesting claim. He says that David had two reasons not to kill Shaul. He says, why didn't David kill Shaul? So first he says, there's no other way to read the psukim, is that it's part of David's incredible piety. But he also suggests that David had a political motive here, which the truth is tracks with a lot of David's behavior, where often David's chasidus does help him politically. He says, it's not in David's interest to make it a light thing to assassinate kings. Why? Because David knew, so David did not want to set a precedent that there is any legitimate reason whatsoever to assassinate a king. Therefore, he wanted to totally ban, totally distance the idea that people should assassinate kings. It's an interesting suggestion. The Abar Benel makes the same suggestion. It's definitely not what the Psukim emphasized. There also seems to be some tension in Ralbag, right? Because on the one hand, he's having David first thinking, oh, this is a great opportunity for me to kill Shaul. And then, thinking politically that he's going to back off. Okay, so that's one way, that's one approach in reading the Psukim. David starts off as excited as his men, then he masters himself. The Malbim reads the Psukim differently. The Malbim is a very, very interesting idea. The Malbim suggests, he says, look, it's hard to read the Psukim that David tried to kill Shaul and miss. And we can suggest for the Ralbag that it was dark and it was an emotional moment or whatever. But David is by now a famous hardened warrior. And if he's coming up on Shaul totally unsuspected from the blind side, doesn't know that he's there, come on, he's not going to miss. And that's not what the Pesukim sounds like they were saying. The Pesukim sounded like they were saying that David deliberately cut off the corner of Shaul's Ne'il. So the Malbim suggests that David was unsure. This is an unbelievable dilemma. On one hand, is he going to assassinate in cold blood the king, his father-in-law, Mashiach Hashem? Very difficult. David's not a murderer. On the other hand, his men are telling him, and it's so obviously true, Hashem has given Shaul into your hands. It's not a coincidence that he's in your cave. So he says, David was mesupak bazeh. Im kvar nishloa malchus Shaul v'im ritzon Hashem shimas aydei hanirdaf. Halachically, David is justified. Shaul is trying to kill him. He's a rodev. There's no question. There is no bezdin anywhere that is going to give David grief for killing Shaul. So David wasn't sure. But not that his emotions got the best of him, like the Ralbag suggests. He just genuinely wasn't sure what to do. And you can't ask the Urim Tumim right here, right? He's got to make the decision on his own. Last week, David could ask the Urim Tumim again and again. This time, David's got to trust his gut. But he doesn't know what his gut thinks. Fascinating idea. So says the Malbim. So David says, I'm going to try to figure out the right thing. I'm going to try to figure out what my instinct tells me. So he tests it by cutting off the edge of Shaul's robe. This is a partial act of rebellion, because he's humiliating the royal robes of Shaul. And then what happened afterwards? So he tested, and what happened? So after David cuts the piece of the robe, his instinct reacts. His neshama reacts and tells him, you've got to stop. If someone has their neshama in a good place, it will react when you're doing something wrong. Yetzer Tov is going to just have a visceral reaction when you feel like you're stepping on the wrong path. When someone's a habitual sinner, so Chazal say nasis lo kehater. He can blithely go and do the wrong thing because he's just destroyed his instincts to tell him that he should stop. But when you're summoned on David's Madrega, so he does a little act, he cuts the robe, and by making tangible what he's doing, suggests the Malbim, that brought his instinct to bear, and his instinct tells him, this is not what you should do. Even though it seems like Hashem has handed Shaul into his hands, that's not the approach that he should be taking right now. And then David stands down, goes back to his men. Fascinating suggestion of the Malbim. And the third way to read the Pesukim is the way that Rashi understands the Pesukim. Rashi tells us that some of this seems to be read out of order. Rashi says you have to just mix and match the Pesukim a little bit, interestingly. That first the people come to David and say, you've got to kill Shaul. Then he says, you cut and paste. Before David goes after Shaul, he immediately tells his men, I'm not killing Shaul. That's out of the question. Not like the Ralbag who thought that David tried to do it. Not like the Malbim who thought that David wasn't sure if he should do it and gave it a test run. The way Rashi reads the Pesukim is, David knew from the get-go, I'm not killing Shaul. You do not kill the Mashiach Hashem under no circumstances. He gets him to stand down, and then he goes, and what does he do instead? He says, but I am going to do something. I'm going to cut off a little piece of David's robe. And even that, suggests Rashi, even cutting off the robe, he regrets after he did it. Even that piece of rebellion, he realizes he should have so much respect for the Mashiach Hashem, Hashem's anointed, that even cutting off the robe was an inappropriate act. So those are three main ways that the Mefarshim read what David does over here. Either he wants to do it, but he stops. He's not sure if he should do it, but he stops. Or he knows for sure he shouldn't do it at all. And then what he regrets is even the minor act of cutting the robe. So then, of course, Shaul comes out of the cave, and we have the great moment of confrontation. David calls out to him, Adoni HaMelech. Shaul turns around. David bows down to the ground. V'yiko, David al-Payim arza v'yishtachu. And then David goes off on a long speech. It's the first time we've seen David talk to Shaul since, I think, since Goliath. I don't think we've seen David actually talk with Shaul since Goliath. And look how long David talks for, right? This is a speech. This is not just a couple of words. David gives a full speech to Shaul. And we can, two things. Number one, we can imagine the emotion that's gone on here. This is the first spoken words we're seeing from David since the Spears episodes, since the Michal episode, since the Shmuel running to Shmuel episode, since being chased to three different places in the wilderness, two secret rendezvous with Yehonasan. After all that running to the Plishtim, disguising himself, almost being killed, who knows how many times, starving, the destruction of Nob, all that emotion gets poured into the speech. So obviously, David is speaking to Shaul. At the same time, David is not only speaking to Shaul. Who else is he speaking to? He's speaking to all the men who are there, right? David never forgets that he's also the leader of his 600 men. And he can never, there's no rest from that. He always says, they're not a group that, you know, is going to work without a leader. So he's speaking to Shaul, but he's also speaking to his men. And let's see what he says. The speech we need to read inside. So first he says to Shaul, why do you listen to, you know, anonymous people who tell you that David wants ill for you? This is a day that Hashem gave you into my hands. Even Shaul cannot deny it. Hashem gave you into my hands. You convince yourself that Hashem is giving me to you, says David. You're convincing yourself that Hashem wants you to win? Come on. You can't deny it. Hashem has given you to me. V'almar l'hargacha. And I could have killed you. V'atacha se'lecha. I have mercy on you. V'omar l'ashlach yadi ba'adoni ki Mashiach Hashem. Who I'm not going to kill you because you are Hashem's anointed. Classic David HaMelech, of course, it's two psukim in, and he's already mentioned the Yudke Vavke twice. Hashem's name is always on David's lips. Yeah. The Avi Re'eh, Gam Re'eh is Kanaf Milcha. My father, see. Now, this, why is he calling Shaul his father? It could be that there's a recollection of the former intimate relationship that they had, and Shaul is David's father because he's David's father-in-law. So back in the good times, he probably did call him Avi. As we'll see, for good reason, Targum Yonasan does not go in that direction. Targum Yonasan translates father, scroll down over here, Riboni. He understands father to mean my master. Right, that it's not necessarily a term of endearment, but it's certainly a term which could be understood either way. Either, you know, Shaul, father of Israel, master of all of us, or my father, could be read either way. And this pasuk here, you know, really gives a window into David's emotion because we see the repetition of the phrases that he has. Re'e gam re'e es kanaf milcha. See, yes, see, right? He doubles. Re'e gam re'e es kanaf milcha biyadi. Here is the piece of your me'il. Kibukar si es kanaf milcha v'lo hargticha. I cut off your me'il, but I didn't kill you. Da ure'e, no and see. Again, another doubling. Ki ein biyadi ra'a v'fasha v'lo chatasilach. I have no evil against you. I have no transgression against you. And I didn't sin against you. Right? That's the third time that David is using repeated phrases. This is an emotional, it's pouring out right now. And it's a dramatic speech. Ve'ata tzode es nafshi l'kachta. Right, that brutal short. He's saying, I did nothing. 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 And you want to kill me. Now, is this, let's ask, is David hoping for reconciliation? David clearly is not. David, in this parak, thinks that the relationship is beyond repair. And do not mistake David's mercy for thinking that Shaul should get off the hook. He's not forgiving Shaul at all. What is he saying? He's going to say it twice. Yishpot Hashem beini uveinecha. I'm not going to kill you, but I trust that Hashem is going to judge you. Kamani Hashem mimecha v'yadi lo siyevach. Hashem will avenge me, but I am not going to strike you. So this David telling him, look, I had mercy on you. You know, Shaul's mercy has been destroyed from the whole episode of Amalek, and then to Nov, and then to now. David's midas harachamim is still where it should be. but he's not forgiving Shaul. Evil will strike the evildoers. The Malbim suggests, what's the ancient proverb over here? The Malbim suggests this refers to actually Cain and Hevel. You know, when Cain killed Hevel, so ultimately Cain's going to be destroyed by Rishayim, right? Hashem is not going to destroy Cain by himself. So I'm not going to destroy Shaul. Someone else is going to destroy Shaul. Of course, who does end up destroying Shaul? Shaul ends up destroying Shaul. And he kills himself when he's being attacked by the Plishtim. Finally, David concludes, Acher miyatza melech Yisrael, who have you gone after? Acher miyatza rodef, another doubling, right? Another dramatic line. Acher kelev mis, acher pirosh echad, after a dead dog, after a little flea, right? First he's a dead dog, and he's a flea, even lower. Drama, repetition. He's speaking to Shaul, he's also speaking to his psyche, he's also speaking to his men. And then he repeats. So we should not make any mistake what the core message of David is. He repeats Pasuk Yibayis and Pasuk Tetzvah, another repetition. Behaya Hashem l'dayim, I trust Hashem to judge. V'shafapinu be'nacha, he will judge between you and me. He's going to fight my fight. Right? The different languages of judgment that David has. Hashem is a dayan, Hashem is a shofet, Hashem is a riv, he's a debater, he's a judger, he's a judge. And he's going to judge me from your hand. So this amazing combination from David on the one hand of showing the rachamim that he had on Shaul, his moral superiority to Shaul, his crushing moral superiority, and at the same time, his bitachon that Hashem is still going, still has his back, but he's don't confuse mercy with forgiveness. Shaul has sinned against me terribly. What you've done is unforgivable. I am not forgiving what you've done to me. Now, the whole episode of David cutting off the robe of Shaul for sure had to bring Shaul back to something that Chazal flagged as well, which is, of course, the last time we've seen Shaul's robe torn, which was at the moment where the kingdom was taken from him. When Shmuel, right, whether it was Shaul's robe or whether it was Shmuel's robe, that was like a deliberate ambiguity, but that was certainly the moment. Remember, Vayisov Shmuel Alecha, Shmuel turned to go, Vayichazek B'knaf Me'ilo Vayikara. He grabbed his robe and it tore, and the Mefarshim disagreed. Was the point that as Shmuel leaves, the last thing he does is as he turns, he grabs Shaul's robe, or was what happened that as Shmuel turned to leave, Shaul tried to grab him back? And Shaul tore Shmuel's robe, the famous robe that Hannah made for him every year. Either way, the tearing of the robe was associated with the tearing of Malchus. And that's going to happen again in Sefer Melachim, when Shlomo is going to get the same exact message. The tearing of Shlomo's Yerav's going to get the same message. The tearing of the robe, which is going to symbolize the tearing of David's dynasty. So. So to bring that memory back, the symbolism, which unquestionably is deliberate, when David cuts off a piece of the royal me'il, that's a piece of symbolism that that Shaul can't miss for sure. Someone like David, who's such a master of symbolism, and it's amazing just to see Shaul's reaction after that whole long speech. What does David? What does Shaul respond? Ayomer al David. Sadiq Atamimen. Now those three words are amazing from Shaul. Shaul, who can never admit he's wrong under any circumstances. Remember by Amalek, Shmuel was four different times he had Shmuel telling him, admit you're wrong. And Shaul is saying, it wasn't me, it was the people, I didn't do anything, it was the people, we did what you wanted. He can't admit he's wrong, and which is understandable. That's a normal way to behave. In this moment, even Shaul cracked. You did good to me and I did evil to you. And I realized, I can't even deny that Hashem gave me into your hand and you didn't kill me. And Shaul says, this doesn't make any sense. Does anybody find his enemy on the road and just sends him onto a good way? And Mamlechas Yisrael. I'm missing a pasuk that I didn't put on the sheet, which is bad, because the pasuk before Shaul talks, this is unacceptable. I apologize. One second. Just got to get this here. Pasuk right before. One second. Late last night. Pasuk Tazayin, take a look. Ahi chalos David adresa from Eilal Shaul v'yomer Shaul hakolchaze b'ni David v'yisa Shaul kolov v'yev. I can't believe I didn't have it on there. Shaul's immediate reaction is to cry. He calls David his son and he cries. What's going on over here? I mean, Shaul has wrapped himself in so much rationalization. Yeah, I know full well that Shmuel told me, oh my gosh, that I'm not going to be king, that it's being taken away from me. And I've just been convincing myself again and again and again and again that that's not the case. Hashem wants me to rule. Hashem wants David to fall. Hashem wants me. What I want is what Hashem wants. But all that rationalization is wrapped up around the deep, deep truth, which Shaul can bury or bury, but it's always there. It's always there, and it's what drives him to such a ruach ra, and here it comes out, which is that deep down, he knows that Hashem has chosen David. Yehonasan said it, Pemale, to David last week. Remember, Yehonasan said to David last week when he found him in the forest, he said, Atatam locha Yisrael, begam Shaul avi yodeachin. Shaul knows, and it sounds like pie in the sky. What do you mean Shaul knows that David's going to be king? He's chasing David around the whole country. Shaul knows David's going to be king. No, Yonasan was right. Yonasan, the quintessential son of Shaul, the loyal son of Shaul, he knew his father. He knew his father had a side that was good, and it's there, and it's exposed right here. Shaul, in that moment, cracks, and that inside part of him comes out. David's mercy, which is so different from everything that he and Shaul David, breaks out, and he says, I can't believe this. And I know that you are going to be king. Rashi suggests that Shmuel had told Shaul that whoever tears your robe is going to be king, which would, as Rashi is linking the whole episode of the robe over here, it's also explaining why Shaul comes to such a moment of clarity. But look what Shaul says at the end. Ba'ata hishavali b'ashem imtachris ezari achraim tashmid ashmi mibeis avi. Shaul basically surrenders in this moment. He surrenders. I'm going to lose. It's so clear that Hashem is on your side. And for all of the faults in his bitachon, Shaul totally has it over you. He realizes in this one glimmering moment, he recognizes the truth. He says, at least let my descendant survive. And this is exactly the bris that Yehonasan has contracted with David. That gap between father and son, there's a reason why Yehonasan thought that he could stick with David and stick with Shaul. Because here is that one moment of clarity where Shaul and Yehonasan are actually on exactly the same page. Shaul is saying, Ribbono Shel Olam wants David. I'm going to make a bris with David. I'm going to swear with David. Of course, the tragedy is that it doesn't last. And that one moment of clarity, as can so often happen, if we don't really push ourselves, it's not so difficult to be inspired in the moment. Right? The difficulty is to actually capitalize on that inspiration. We think back to the things we feel, Ne'ilah night, the world looks a lot different to us the night of Ne'ilah than it does 3 weeks later. And that's exactly what happens, unfortunately, with Shaul. He's able to achieve that moment of clarity, but it doesn't last. And David knows well enough to recognize that. And the parak ends, Vayelech Shaul el Beiso. Shaul goes back home, but David banashav alu el hamatzuda. David stays in the in the desert stronghold. There's not going to be a reconciliation over here. They still go their separate ways. There's one piercing moment of clarity. We can imagine what that did for David. We can imagine what that did for David's men. I imagine David's men watching this whole episode unfold. Imagine the inspiration that they must have drawn from seeing their leader's moral clarity, from seeing on one hand what the Ribbono Shel Olam did for David, and then seeing David withstanding the test, and Shaul's response to David withstanding the test. That's how you lead people. That's how you elevate people. Shaul's able to come to that realization, but there's no reconciliation. It's a very good reason why, that whole speech that David has, the one thing that's not in there is forgiveness. The one repeated message that David had was, I'm not going to kill you, but Hashem is going to judge between you and me. The David HaMelech of love and Tehillim and Rachamim, here he calls for Minas Adin, and we can understand why. Okay, so that's all I got for today. So next week, Mirtz Hashem, hopefully things will be smooth, and we'll recap some major themes, and then we'll hit the break for the summer until next year. So thanks everyone for coming, and have a great rest of the week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.